Good evening. This is December 2nd, and this is Lynn Alexander. This is Project U Radio, and this is a project of the Literary Underground. We actually are on our third segment tonight, and tonight it will be me and Paul Corman Roberts. We will be doing the show. Unfortunately, Frankie Metro is out in San Francisco. Hopefully,
hey, wait a minute. That's not far away from me.
Right. He's hopefully kicking it back in his overnight digs, and so I'm not sure if he'll be able to call in, but I would say probably not, and we'll let him have tonight to coast and be off. I guess it's more of an announcement, and it's sort of related to the topic, but I just wanted to mention really fast that tomorrow Right for Rights kicks off, which is a project of Amnesty International, and it's the point of it is to demonstrate that political prisoners around the world have not been forgotten. It's about calling out human rights abuses, and there's still time to get involved if anyone out there is interested. You can certainly Google it and get the information. The call-in number, we usually recap that information for tonight, is 805-856-2808. And I'll bring Paul in. I just wanted to mention that tonight's topic is censorship. We had a little blurb up about it, and it actually came about because of some discussions that sort of went back and forth about a new project through Literary Underground, which is Citizens for Decent Literature. Michelle McDonald had done a print issue of it, and there's now an online site that Mike Gazinski will be editing. And I'll just say hello to Paul and bring him in before we talk a little bit about why it's called that, because that was sort of the a little bit of the controversy in some of the discussions about it. So good evening, Paul.
Good evening, Lynn. Good evening, Lynn. Always a pleasure to be here with the folks on the Literary Underground. I guess it seems we have more people listening in on any given night than we thought we did originally. So thanks to everybody who's listening in tonight.
Right, and we do appreciate it. And you know what? And obviously, you never know. We make a point of saying it's unscripted, uncensored, and it's really intended to be an open forum. And sometimes people hear things that they don't like, that they don't appreciate, and sometimes we say things that are deserved, depending on how you look at it, and so we'll leave it at that. I mean, it is an open forum, and we really do our best to try not to restrict anybody. You know, this is about free speech, and that's one of the issues that I was hoping actually to get into a little bit.
Fuck yeah.
Because, you know, as you know, I mean, there are people who sort of say, well, there's a fine line between free speech and slander. There's a fine line between speaking your mind and expressing an opinion and, you know, causing harm or you know, creating some sort of, you know, difficulty for other people. And there is a fine line. I mean, I think there are times.
So what you're saying is that you think there is something wrong with crying fire in a crowded theater?
Well, I think that some people would say that when there's a serious public threat, you know, that maybe a little bit of restriction because of danger is warranted. But, you know, I kind of come from the camp, and I think that sort of ties into the goal of Citizens for Decent Literature. I kind of come from the camp that the less censorship and restriction, the better, and the less opportunities and machinery to do that, the better. The less structure there is to control the thoughts of other people and their free speech, the better. I think it's always a bad idea to control people and what they say, even when we don't like it, even when we don't agree with it, even when it's downright disgusting or nasty and offensive. I think we should have the right to say it. And, you know, just background on what Citizens for Decent Literature was. It was actually a pro-censorship advocacy body, and it was back in 1958 by Charles Keating. And at one point, the group actually had over 100,000 members and 300 chapters, and it actually became the largest anti-pornography organization, really, in our history. And so that sort of shows how many people are concerned about it and, you know, and feel that it's a cause that they would personally like to champion. But like I said, I kind of come from the camp of, you know, live and let live, and if that's something you like and you're an adult and you're consenting and you're not exploited the way that, I mean, I don't certainly don't approve of it when it comes to children or anything like that, but you know what, among adults, I think it's, you know, it's a matter of preference and choice. So what do you think, Paul?
Well, yeah, amongst the adults, it's a mixed world for sure. You know, it's funny. Well, I watched, there's Citizens for Decent Literature website has this little clip, which is, you know, the original, you know, this little film clip from that anti, you know, that pro-censorship group. I'm just wondering if the guy in the video is Charles Keating himself, because Charles Keating, as we know, has a long and storied history for you know, sort of pushing his own agenda and his own view on the society at large.
Well, how unusual.
Yeah. Well, let's not forget, he was a big part of the big savings and loan scandal back in '87, or you know, he had all those fake investments that bottomed out back then. As it happened to know, he's, you know, the big magnate that owns the you know, the hotel, the big hotels down in Phoenix, down in Arizona, where he made a ton of money down there. He's also the owner of Pacific Lumber when they took on their huge slash and burn clear cutting policies in the forests of Northern California. So Keating's, you know, it sounds like he got off to a very auspicious start with his projects and his good works on behalf of, I guess, good, decent, moral people. and I'll get off my Charles Keating soapbox now, but the, you know, it's, it's censorship. You know, this is an issue that's difficult, I think, right now, especially because you have, you know, the Senate Intelligence Bill that's coming up for a vote now, that allows, is basically going to allow people to be picked up, and will allow U.S. citizens to be picked up and charged like terrorists, and essentially, you know, give them the possibility of U.S. citizens being deprived their rights. So I think, you know, it is a relevant subject. You really have to, you know, the First Amendment has to be given a lot of leeway, I think, if we're really going to call ourselves a serious civilization. But I don't, you know, even the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, there's a lot of people who think it's okay to, you know, interrogate U.S. citizens if they don't fit the proper, you know, political mold that they feel is necessary for protecting what they consider to be the sanctity of our country. When it comes down to protecting morality or protecting sanctity, I mean, whose morality or sanctity are we talking about? You know, in a free country, it's supposed to be pretty wide open. You know, democracy is not pretty. Democracy is a big, ugly mess, but the majority wins. And I don't. And I get a little concerned when the morality and judgment of a few winds up carrying the day over the majority. And that's. I think that's part of the problem with that. I think it's a crucial problem. So, yeah, I'm with it. It's you have to allow people to say what they will, and it isn't that there aren't consequences for certain types of free speech. If you do slander, if you do attack, if you do cross lines, and those lines can be very gray, and as we know. But regardless of that, you take your chances just like with the market and with your rights, you take your chances. I'd like to think we live in a society that's going to favor letting people express themselves freely and in many forums that are available to them, but not everybody agrees with that either.
Well, I think intention also has a lot to do with it. I mean, if I point out, for example, if I call out a company because they're engaged in behavior that is potentially harmful or destructive, I mean, is my intention to slander or, you know, is it defamation of that company, or is my intention really to exercise my freedom of speech to call attention to something that is, you know, potentially harmful that I feel people should know about? Now, there are a lot of people who would say, well, you know, you can't do that. And a lot of the suppression and the things that go on are certainly to protect the interests of various people. But I think it's interesting because a lot of people don't – you know, whether or not you take the United Nations seriously or international law seriously, it is interesting that, you know, back in 1948, the General Assembly did adopt a declaration, and in that was the Declaration of Human Rights. And not to get, you know, too much on a soapbox with my human rights thing, but, you know, what it says is very simple, and it's been adopted by the United States and by most countries. And it says everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media and regardless of frontiers. So it's interesting that, you know, as a nation, you know, we will say that we value, you know, freedom of thought and creative freedom and intellectual freedom, and that this is what we're all about. You know, people say this is what the U.S. is built on. You know, people came here because they wanted freedom of religion. People came here because this was the nation where, you know, you really could, you know, be and say the things that you wanted. And yet it's interesting that people, the same people that talk about our forefathers and our history will turn around and say, no, this is a nation of Christians, or this is a nation of, you know, one particular religion, and there's no room for any other. And, you know, it seems to me it kind of flies in the face of what we're talking about. And I think that's part of the problem, is it's so riddled with contradictions. But, you know, we did sign on to that, and so that tells me that the majority of people really do, on some level, maybe intellectually, you know, value free speech, but maybe when it comes down to things they're uncomfortable with, you know, they don't. I mean, we can look at a lot of examples.
Who decides what's uncomfortable? Who decides, you know, where the line is? I think, you know, there are, I mean, again, you can appeal to certain inalienable rights, you know, treat others as you'd be treated. You know, you don't have the right to go around taking out blood feuds on anyone, whatever you want. We're not talking about that, obviously. We're talking about, it's like, what are you saying publicly? What, you know, how is what you're saying could possibly affect, you know, the party that you're referencing to, if you are in fact verbally attacking someone? How, yeah, it's a case by case basis.
Right,
and you know, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say that unfortunately Michelle can't call in this evening, or at least I don't think she'll be able to. But it would have been nice to hear her take on it, because she's really the brain, you know, it was her brainchild. You know, she really came up with this printed, you know, an online site, and I think she was motivated by that idea, but also the fact that, you know, to a certain extent, the independent and small press is, you know, there are a lot of people that want to impose taste and, you know, content and just this idea of what's good and what's bad. And one of the things about independent press is that, you know, those standards, you can take those standards and you can throw them out. You know, you can invent your own standards.
That's one of the ways that the market deals or sort of imposes their own censorship. You know, there are philosophical positions that you can write from, which are, you know, generally that are considered accepted, and they might meet a certain level of market success. But then there are some ideas or some positions that you can write from that simply cannot be accepted or tolerated, and will instantly be marginalized within the Western market structure that exists. With varying degrees of success, depending on whether you're in Europe or Canada or the United States. But, you know, in the United States, you know, the leading towards, you know, taking of media and really consolidating media into these sort of singular corporately packaged entities has been a form of censorship, and it's not free if we really truly had what you would call a free market, then there probably wouldn't be that much in the way of genuine censorship. There would probably be a lot more craziness and anarchy out there in the media at large. You can still see that quite a bit on the internet, which is one reason why I think people love it, is I think there's people like having a certain amount of chaos in their lives, and the internet provides some of that for them. But at the same time, the real mediums that still carry the day, you know, radio and television, and there's things you can't say in those mediums, things they won't let you say in those mediums, and less every day. And that's one of the reasons why a society like the United States of America can take free speech and say, yeah, we like free speech for the most part, but, and if you're considered too crazy, if you spout things that are dangerous, then you're told that you're dangerous and you're left to that. And you see that in political campaigns, you see it in conspiracy theories, regardless of what merit there might be to them or not.
Right. No, I think that's true. I mean, I think we're pretty much on the same page about this. I'm hoping that Mike calls in, because he's actually, and I just sort of wanted to, I don't want to just plug that particular project, but, he is editing the online version of Citizens for Decent Literature. And one of the things that came up was there was, I think, maybe a misunderstanding, because someone had commented that, it's wrong for an editor, for really anybody, to evaluate the creative work of other people. And I wonder if this person took it when, they saw the name Citizens for Decent Literature, kind of took it literally and didn't realize realize that it's called that for that very reason, because it is intended to call attention to that very issue imposing your sense of what's good and what's decent and what's moral on other people. I mean, that's the whole point. The point is really to really make fun of it, I think is part of it. I don't think people, hopefully people will come to understand that the name is the opposite, that it's really going against the point of that particular group, by sort of co-opting, the title and saying, this is about the opposite of what they stood for. He's hopefully going to do a good job with it. I'm wondering if I have 607 that I just brought into it, and I'm hoping that this is him, but I could be wrong. I've been wrong before with area codes, so. But 607 is on, and we just wanted to say hello and welcome you to what we're doing. And any thoughts that you have about, just censorship in general, and really this idea of a group of people telling you what's right and what's decent and what's moral and what should be read and what should be banned. I mean, just this whole concept. I mean, anything you want to throw out there is cool.
Hello?
What's up? How are you?
What's up? You called me out how many times? Like 4 times tonight?
No, what do you... No, I'm
You called
what I'm trying
me
to
out,
do.
Yeah.
No, I'm just trying to explain, because I had a feeling that there was a person the other day, and I think that they misunderstood the point of why it's called
I don't know where that came from, that shitty poetry thing. That wasn't me. It was there on the link, but I do have to say, there is a thing as shitty poetry. Some people send just garbage. I mean, come on, you know this.
Right. Well, I did see his point that, on a certain level, I think that I recognize the fact that what I think is lousy, you might think is wonderful, there's
he was
taste
all Shakespearean
and it is,
about it. He was real Shakespearean about it,
Yeah.
But really, some people just send I won't even go there, but what people send sometimes is just trash. I've had people taunt me and say, oh, you don't like rhyming poetry, Mr. Citizens Man, and they send me rhyming poetry, and they taunt me. So, it's just...
Taunters. They're taunters, Michael.
Actually, I had a plan to do that myself. Paul can tell you that I actually wanted to do that also, to taunt you, because, I don't know. There's something fun about taunting you in particular that we're
yeah, well,
finding.
You know, I tend to go kind of crazy, so taunting me can probably be kind of fun.
Well, it is, with unpredictable results. But you did make, you, but see, in your defense, you did make the point that it is subjective, and everybody knows it's subjective. And that's one of the problems when you have groups that, that come out and say what's offensive and what's moral and what's good and what should be banned. I mean, you know, because that's subjective, too. I mean, what I think is offensive, you know, might be what you love to read and what you like to watch, you know? I mean, that's the problem with it. It's one person's standard.
My thought is, you know, I have publicly, over and over, I have slammed Red Fez. I just love to slam the Fez. That's so my thought was Michelle got me on this project as kind of, you know, well, you want to see what poetry editors go through? Well, here, how about you take that aside? So it's kind of like the joke's on me, you know. She's probably laughing hysterically, you know.
She probably is. Well, she's probably sleeping, but she's, if you know, she's, you
no,
know.
No, she's listening. Believe me, she's listening.
Right. Yeah,
yeah,
well,
I can't imagine
that. I thought it was kind of, you know, it was kind of, well, you want to know what we go through? Well, screw you. Here you go. Here's a project. You read. You become a poetry editor. So that's kind of how I view it, you know.
Yeah.
That's how Michelle views the revolution. It's kind of like, okay, you're gonna call me out on this job? All right, then you take the reins. You steer the boat for a while and see how that works for you. it's like the old Digger store, and they hit Ashbury in 1967. They had this thing they called the Free Store. And they would get people walking and going, who's in charge around here? And the pat response to that question at any time is, you are, man.
Well, I like that, though. I mean, I'm a very non-hierarchical, you know, kind of minded person. And, I mean, I think Michelle probably did have some interest in pulling you over to the dark side. I mean, you know, I think so, and I think also because that she felt that you could rise to the challenge, you know, and she probably knew what she was doing there, so that's cool.
It's not easy, I'll tell you that. You know, it gets hard because, you know, I mean, how can you edit poetry? It's subjective. How can you really make a decision as to what's good and what's not? Really,
I think one of the beauties. I think one of the really beautiful things about poetry is, with every poem, you always. I think you always have to start over from the beginning. Even if people send you these long numbered themed things, or you know, miniature, they're little mini chaps that are in 10 parts that are like, oh my god, for real, this is a real poetry submission. I mean, if you haven't seen that, you're going to. And when you do, you'll be like, wow, really? You really didn't read these guidelines. You really just thought I would publish your book, you know. And that's what you'll get. But still, you can still take them one at a time. And the poem on its own demands to be reassessed from the very beginning. And I think you always keep that. It's always good to keep that in mind. Well, it's helpful.
You know, well, I've gotten those kind of poems, those kind of submissions. But also too, it gets hard because, you know, you're not taking work based on its merit sometimes. You're taking work based on how will it work with the rest, you know, of the publication. So you have to reject people who've sent you some really good stuff.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's not easy.
No, it isn't.
Nope.
It definitely isn't. But, you know, like you said, sometimes you're going for an overall, you know, tone or a certain, you know, I mean, everybody's got their own way of looking at things. And, you know, I mean, that's your call. I mean, that's one of the things, is that you have that kind of control, and some people are responsible with it and some people are not. I'm actually going to pick up 818, if you don't mind, because I kind of think, you know, since we're talking about censorship, the more the merrier, you know. But, you know, because, I mean, I think that we... I think we should do definitely at some point a show about really editing and the different ways of looking at it. But I'm also interested to, you know, in the idea of kind of deciding what's appropriate. I mean, you know, that, like, for example, if somebody puts nude photos or somebody does something, you know, uses, I mean, let's suppose I write something and, you know, I trash all the different people that I know, and I, and particularly if I identify them, I mean, is that my free speech? Am I using my ability to get words out there to basically essentially trash people? I mean, you know, what are you, you know, I wonder how you guys feel about that, about being a little bit too candid in the writing, too.
It depends, you know. I mean, freedom of speech is freedom of speech. If it's a good, solid poem, I don't care who you're trashing, you know, just send it.
Right, and 818 is on, so...
Yeah.
You can jump in whenever you want. 818. Yeah. What we do is we sort of identify people by the area code, because I can't see who they are on the screen. I can just see the number, and I don't like doing it like that. But that's the only way to let people know that they can.
818.
Oh, it's FN. How are you?
Hello, FN Wright.
I'm fair, but anyway.
Oh, no, that's right.
Huh? But anyway, censorship? I kind of just been listening. I had trouble finding the phone number. And, but no, like when I trash someone, I'll give you. Example, my first novel, The Whorehouse, I worked for a chain of record stores called The Warehouse with an E. And, well, I ended up writing a satire about them called The Whorehouse. And I didn't name names because I didn't want to be sued. I wanted to be sued, but I didn't want them to win. Because
right. I mean, I think that's been upheld many times, that if it's for satirical or humorous purposes, I mean, that's part of the premise of the Larry Flint case, I believe, is that, you know, that if it's obviously satirical and meant to be humorous, you know, then it's permissible. I mean, it is your free speech. You're using your writing to draw attention to whatever...
Well, Flint did publish Bukowski, so, I mean, he can't be all too bad, but, nah, that was, but, you know, yes, I mean, people have a choice. Do I read it or don't I read it? And if they want to read it, don't read it.
Right. And, I mean, do you feel that way about pornography? I mean, you know, you have the choice to not look at it. You have the choice to, if that's offensive to you, or you, for whatever reason, feel it's morally reprehensible, then, you really have the choice to just not look at it and not watch it. Or,
exactly.
You know. So I don't understand why people get so interested in laws and control, and, you know, I kind of look at it like, hey, if that's not your thing, then don't look at it. Or if you don't like a particular publication and what they do, then don't read it. I mean,
if you watch the Citizens for Decent Literature film clip, I suggest, if you haven't, first of all, I suggest you all go to the Citizens for Decent Literature website and watch the little film clip.
Please.
It's very educational and very important. I think there's a nice little theme music that goes along with it too.
If I'm not mistaken,
it might be the Blog Talk Radio hold music, as a matter of fact. I think they just use that over and over again through the years. He hits that point. He says, and even though we take steps to keep this smut out of the hands, inevitably it winds up in the hands of our children.
But it's
doomsing.
But who defines what is smut and what isn't smut?
Doesn't matter. Winds up in the hands of the kids. It's all about the children.
Right.
It's all about the morality
and
the sake of the children.
You certainly could, as a Their definition tends to be things that basically are sexual or graphic in nature, and their thought is that, you know, it's only a matter of time before it ends up in the wrong hands, and people make that case about all kinds of things, you know,
right.
that, you know, protecting children, and I certainly, you know, I mean, I can appreciate as a parent, but on the other hand, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a little engaged and aware of what your kids are looking at if it's such a concern
exactly.
of yours.
It's up to the parents. You know, the parents need to keep an eye on their kids, you know, expose them to what you want. And, Lynn, we know you expose your kids to, oh, my God, some
graphic things. No, I don't. No, but you know what? I think that on a certain level, it's sort of like germs. I mean, you know, you can scrub your hands, you can sanitize your hands, and you can also accept that to a certain extent, you know, you're going to come in contact with people that are sick. And I look at it in sort of that way. You know, if you protect your home, your kids are going to hear it on the school bus. You know, you can't shelter them from everything. On a certain level, I would rather have it out there in an open way so you can talk about it and you know, address the questions or the things that they have than having this idea that children can be kept in a bubble, because we know they can't be. Spend 10 minutes on a school bus and you'll see that, you know, your efforts to keep them off the internet and away from, you know, profanity are a waste of time. I mean, they'll see it and they'll get to it.
May I interject something?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Okay, when I was young, and there was a ditty going around, something like, whistle while you work, Hitler was a jerk, Mussolini bit his weenie, now it does not work. And so when I was writing my column, Memories of that tune, I wrote that in there, and the editor had me change it. And we didn't know what the hell that meant. And there was 8-page Bibles going around. And the Johnny Fuckerfaster jokes were real popular. And we'd laugh and laugh and laugh. We didn't know what the hell we were laughing about. I mean, it's like, wow, that's really funny, because older kids were laughing. But, of course, now, because of the overexposure, because you've got, you know, things now that children do that we didn't have, and you can't censor everything, because it's as you said, the school bus.
Right, they'll get it. They'll get to it.
Repression really doesn't work. Is that what you're telling me? Oh my God!
Well, it doesn't work. I think it doesn't work, and I also think that, you know, whenever you sort of mystify, you know, whenever you keep something in the dark, I think that to a certain extent you make it more attractive to kids. You know, I think that they, you know, like you said, you would giggle and you didn't even necessarily know what it meant. I mean, you know, I remember one of the first times I saw anything, you know, that was pornographic. I mean, we giggled. We thought it was hilarious because it was, you know, it's almost like, you know, it's so foreign to you. And I'm not saying that you should, you know, bombard your kids with inappropriate things. You know, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it's unrealistic to think that you can control, you know, you can ban books in libraries. You can control every single thing that your child is exposed to, because they will get exposed to it eventually. And they will be so afraid to talk to you about it and to, you know, communicate with other people about it, because, you know, I think that it can be harmful. You know, I think having it out in the open, you know, and saying, yeah, okay, that's something that you saw, and answer a question about it. You know, I don't know. I think kids are curious, and I think adults are curious. I mean,
you're damn right.
So, you know,
What I gathered from F. and Wright's story was, you know, it changes. What is taboo, you know, back then is not taboo right now. It changes. Who makes that decision? What is risque and what is not? You know, what he was dealing with there, he wouldn't deal with now. I mean, it's a big difference today, you know.
Yeah, but they're still, they're out there not too long ago wanting to ban that Tom Sawyer, or was it Huckleberry Finn?
Right,
and N-word
was
used.
They want to ban Ronald McDonald. I mean, you know, there's always people out there who want to ban something.
Yeah.
Makes that fucking decision?
Well, it's, I guess, whoever has the power to do it. I'm just bringing in 701. You're on, too. I apologize. I know you've been waiting a while, so, welcome.
As you bring them in, I'll probably be going off in a bit because I'm not feeling well today, so I'll listen a little bit. So
sorry to hear that, Ashton.
Oh, yeah. I'll recover.
Yeah, no, I feel better. But,
bring them all.
Hang in there, man.
Huh?
Hang in there, man.
Oh, I am. Thanks a lot. I'm going to listen for a while. But
okay. No, I mean, I hope 701 is still there. Are you still on with us?
Yes.
Okay. I hope you were able to sort of, you know, see what we've been talking about. And, you know, I hope you have some thoughts or opinions, you know, one way or the other, if you, you know, want to champion the cause of, you know, moral decency, or you go the other way, you know.
No, I'm 100% against all forms of censorship. I think that you should be able to handle your own kids and tell them what they can and cannot watch. I think that pornography should be allowed. I think you should be able to say anything you want about anybody who you want, because everybody's doing it anyways, whether, you know, it's behind the scenes or not, slandering you all over the place. So what's the difference if I put it into words?
Well,
you know,
and
I mean, of course, when I write poems, I, you know, might change a girl's name or something like that, only because I just don't want to listen to them bitch about it or something. But outside of that, like, I don't believe there should be any form. I think that people are afraid of, like, you know, the naked body, so we can't have pornography, but we can have, like, you know, giant statues of ancient Greek gods with their, like, schlongs hanging out, but we can't, like, look at, like, you know, some woman with, you know, fake blonde hair and big boobs on a piece of paper. You know, who cares? What's the difference?
Right. I mean, would you say that a lot of people feel, I mean, would you say censorship is kind of also like a slippery slope? I mean, once you start going down that path, it's sort of like, you know, there are certain things where I think a lot of us would agree is, you know, kind of crosses a line, but, you know, then you get toward things where people go a little bit crazy. I mean, you know, two gay men holding hands isn't offensive to me, but to some people would say that is. I mean, they, you know, that you could just go crazy with.
If they have the right to say that or print that, or Michelle Bachmann has the right to build, like, gay conversion centers, and I have the right to say that, you know, have gay people over my house and be friends with them and write about them, or, you know. The only thing that bothers me is probably, like, when people start, like, writing disgusting, like, child pornography stuff. But outside of that, I don't think anything.
Right. And I tried to mention in the beginning that I think that's a different thing. I mean, that's a situation of exploitation, of abuse. And I never, I mean, when I talk about free speech, and I mean, I never, just to be clear, I never would condone anything that has to do with children. I mean, we're talking about our adults. In consenting situations,
consenting,
you know,
adults
that are aware of the consequences.
You're not a supporter
and
of Penn State, Citadel, and Syracuse? Come on, now.
Oh, man. Okay, but you had to go there first, didn't you, Michael? You're going to call somebody out. Okay, let's do it, man.
You know what? It sickens me. What the hell's happened to our universities? But go on. Sorry.
What do you mean, universities? I mean, I would say that happens in a lot of, I mean, it's not just there, but you know what, the university situation does show what happens when people pass the buck on responsibility. I mean, you know, in Pennsylvania right now, we have someone who was the district attorney at the time in the Penn State case, and you know, basically the idea was, well, we need the person to do it a number of times so that, you know, we can substantiate their pattern of behavior as one of the excuses. And I kind of, you know, not to go off on that tear, but I kind of look at it like there only needs to be one victim. You know, we don't say, you know, oh, gee, you need to rob 10 people before we do something. And we certainly shouldn't take that attitude with children either. I mean, that whole, you know, like I said, I don't want to go off on that, but that really is, you know, what's going on is an attempt to cover things up because you want to protect the money flow or your own interests. And that's disgusting. But I think you see that everywhere, you know, people covering up the behaviors because of their own self-interest. And that's never acceptable as far as I'm concerned. But
I agree. It was very Catholic of them.
I was going to say the NCAA contacted the Vatican to see if they knew any good lawyers, right?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, it's much better, you know, for the public eye to just move somebody who is, you know, a victimizer to another location, you know, even though you know full well that it'll happen again. I mean, these people
Penn State's problem was they didn't move the victimizer. They kept him and they left him with all of his privileges in place, and that's the rub. That's the problem. But this is not about that. We are getting off the censorship subject here.
Catholic Church.
I interject. That's what I do. But go ahead. Censorship. Go ahead.
I
think that Paul Corman Roberts short shorts during poetry readings should be censored. But,
no question. I know. I wear those 1979 NBA specials, too. Pull them up tight.
Right. And you know what? And Steve Goldberg, we got him.
That was Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, why'd you have to go there? Oh, no. She's so nasty now. She's such an... Lindsay,
now?
Oh, no.
Now
well,
she's nasty. There was a
well,
time, that, you know, when was she cute? Parent Trap? I mean... She was always, yeah, well, you know, she can hang out with Courtney Love now. And
She can.
Yeah.
She's got her Courtney credentials now.
Yeah. Right, but...
I don't think they really, unless, I mean, I could be wrong, I don't really look it up, but I don't think they really, when it comes to fiction, I don't think they really censor it anymore, ever since the Burroughs and Ginsberg stuff back in the day.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure
right.
publishers would like to censor fiction because they make more money, you know, but I don't think they really do. They might censor nonfiction, though. I'm uncertain about that as I don't read much of
right.
it.
I think that's true, but you know what? I think that there are people in, you know, this generation that will look at someone like Ginsberg and say, well, what the hell was the big deal? What was the big deal? What did he really do? What did, you know, they don't really, I think, understand the context of what society was like back then compared to now. Now, you know, writing that's everywhere. It's not a big deal, but back then, you know, it was, and it was, it was a significant turning point, I think, in free speech in literary and creative work. And I don't think people realize sometimes that the pioneers that we've had in our history with some of that. Yeah, now, I mean, now we have the internet. I mean, you know, it's anything goes. It's wide open. But, you know, that wasn't always the case. And there are a lot of people that would like us to get back to that, you know. Even online, I mean, there are people that would like to control your online content, what you post, what you view, what you see. I mean, it's like Chinese Google.
Absolutely.
You know,
there
are people that want
the,
that back.
Did you ever hear of the Jesus computer filter?
But it still exists.
Right.
Did you ever hear of the Jesus computer filter?
You know, today.
We have chaos.
You know, censored today. So, you know.
I think I'm not catching what Mike's saying.
Yeah. Today someone told me, and I won't mention any names, I don't do that, but, you know, I can do an online chat book as long as it's not pornographic or racist or anything controversial. I really had that happening today. As long as it doesn't go against the grain, I can do an online chat book. You know, so that, in a sense, is a form of censorship. I mean, that's huge. You know, especially
well,
since most of my poems about blowjobs, you know. But go ahead.
Well, I think an editor has that discretion to say, you know, look, I mean, we don't publish anything that's racist, or we don't publish anything that's, you know, homophobic. You know what I mean? I think
the
that an editor has
that. I agree with it 100%, but, you know, the point is it's still a form of censorship. It still happens. You know, anytime you limit anyone, if I tell someone as an editor, you can't, you know, I won't take this poem because it, you know, says this or says that, it's still a form of censorship. It's going to happen every day, no matter what.
Right. I mean, I think I can think of an example where, I was at a site a long time ago, and the person who edited that particular site had a whole series of jokes that were basically rape jokes. And, you know, obviously a lot of people took exception to that and said, you know, well, this is a horrible thing to joke about, and it's demeaning to victims. And his position was, well, yeah, but it's a joke. So even
right.
I mean, that's a tough call, too. What's funny and what's a joke? And when are you just kidding around, and when does it kind of cross the line to being cruel and, you know, all of that? That's tough.
You know, but it's not a matter about being cool. In my opinion, I think everyone has a right to put out what they want to, you know, and you know, the site that told me, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, they have that right, too, and I respect
that. Right, right.
You know, they don't want to put out a certain kind of material. They shouldn't have to. You know, but it's still, censorship is going to happen. You know, it's still a form of censorship.
And you can still self-publish, you know. That's
well,
the way, if you're willing to put up the cost of self-publishing, you really can say anything you want.
Okay, what do you self-publish? Come on, Lulu. Let's do Lulu, okay?
All right, stop.
Well, I mean, we had that.
Yeah.
I'm willing to bet Lulu has some exceptions.
I mean, we published, you know, columns by people. We had this idea that we would have alternative views, you know, and we thought, okay, well, we'll have different columns by different people with different perspectives, you know, and one was a little bit more on the libertarian side, and there were people who said, well, you know, what's wrong with you people for having these views? And I said, you know what, if you're not old enough and mature enough and, you know, to understand that one person's opinion, you know, doesn't represent everybody involved, then you're an idiot and you need to read something else, you know? I mean, you know, we consciously made the choice to try to have some diversity, even though we didn't agree with what this person had to say. Well, I didn't agree with what he had to say, but that's part of it. I mean, you know, you have the right to say things that we don't agree with.
Well, you guys let me call in. You haven't cut me off yet, so yeah.
No, I'm glad you called in. I'm glad. You know, but I think that it's, you know, these are it gets difficult though. It gets difficult when you start getting into taste and subjective things, and that's why I say, you know, the less we control it, the better. And you know, the less we have in place to control people, the better, you know. And you know, thank goodness there is Lulu, because if it weren't for things like that, you know, I mean, I think it's great that you have that alternative, you know, and blogs and all of these ways to get your thoughts out, you know, even if it's junk. I mean, you know, so what? You know, I would rather have junk.
All hail the Tower of Babel. That's,
well,
you know, but yeah.
But in all fairness, I will say, you know, as far as a poet putting out his or her own stuff, normally the poet doesn't know when to quit. You know, there's been many a times, and I hate to admit it, that an editor has said, hey, maybe you should cut out this word or this line. And normally they're fucking right. You know, so... You know, Lulu can be a good and bad thing.
Well, there are also, and this is probably another topic, and I think we should have it, but I think that there's also the question of, you know, are people, you know, just because I put a website up in a couple minutes, is that an editor? And I don't know. I mean, anyone can call themselves an editor. It doesn't necessarily mean that their opinion about what to change is any better than yours. So it really depends on how you look at it. You know, you might find that it's very beneficial to work with an editor, but the person you're working with might have, you know, very little expertise compared to you either. I mean, you know, and it may not even take a lot of expertise. Some people are just good editors and they have no training at all. I mean, it really depends.
Every time someone has told me something, as far as an editor goes, I've submitted something, every time they've told me, well, maybe you want to get rid of this or maybe you want to do this, they've been right. The poem has been that much better, you know, because of that. So an editor can be a good thing.
Right. Well, and so can having just a second pair of eyes for anyone. I mean, certainly if I send something to Paul and say, hey, what do you think about this? And he says, well, you know, I really think that the second line just not working for me. I don't know what you're talking about, you know. I mean, I would appreciate that just because sometimes having an outside person take a look is helpful, you know, I think, in the process, you know. But I'm going to just, you know, and I hope we still have 701 here, but I'm going to put through 419. So, you know, it's sort of anarchy. You just kind of chime in when you want to. So I did put on 419 and welcome to our discussion.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. I'm all right. How are you?
That's cool. No, we're cool. We're just hanging out, arguing a little bit about censorship. Not arguing. I think we mostly are in agreement.
Editing is a form of censorship.
You don't argue.
I don't know. I mean, as an editor, I don't think it's my job to change a person's work. I think it's my job to take the best work that they sent that could be represented. I mean, I wouldn't change anybody's work. I don't think.
Yeah, I really don't either. I kind of look at it like, you know what?
That's why I like to have more than I need to work with, so I can just pick the best stuff, you know what I mean?
Right, and I mean, I'm not asking you that you identify, you know, your press or anything like that, but I mean, how do you feel about...
I'm the head poetry editor of Red Fez.
Are you?
Yes, I am.
Don't get me started on Red Fest.
Right. I mean, how do you feel about this idea though of people like restricting, you know, just their, where their agenda really is to just restrict other people and their freedom and all of that? I mean, you know, I think it's, you know, a bad idea in almost every case that you can think of. It's a bad idea.
Yeah,
you know,
and it's your choice not to submit to those places if you feel that way about them.
Yeah. I mean, I
agree with him. If you feel that way about them, don't submit.
Yeah, you can't change them. You can't change what somebody else is going to present. You know, just because you don't agree with it, that should be common sense. But some people feel, you know, some people feel the need to go all out and go on a crusade about it anyway.
Yeah, I do that all the time, Paul.
I mean,
I guess so.
I mean, we have a lot of different editors on here, and you know, I'm wondering what would you think if somebody sent a poem that was, you know, racist? That was, I mean, would you just? I mean,
no, I wouldn't publish it. Me.
I got to judge a poetry contest at a high school a couple of months ago, where there was there was a kid writing about the difference between races, and I didn't find the poem itself to be inherently racist, but it was very challenging, and there were other people who really in the room, people who are also judges of these poems, shied away from it. They're all, you know, they're like, oh well, you know, yes, it's well rendered, and you know, because it was this very balanced view of tension between different racial tribes. And, you know, and the author is clearly writing from, you know, one side of one of the tribes. And but overall, I didn't find anything judgmental about it. It was very good, and it spoke truth. It spoke the truth, and I had to support it as a winning candidate, as a winning poem. It didn't win. It got second place. But you know, you have to have a really discriminating eye for this sort of thing.
To
make a pun about it.
Racist, that's still censorship. If you don't publish it because it's racist, that's censorship.
Yeah, but it's
that's
so so so. What I mean, would you say then it's okay? So it is okay to publish things that are hateful and hurtful.
Racist sites that the authors can contribute stuff to. I guess there are. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, you know what? You have the right to your racist poem, but you know, send it somewhere else then.
I'll be honest. I wouldn't suggest any racist. Submit racist poems to Red
Fez. What if it's a good poem? No matter if it's racist or not, if it's a good solid poem, I would publish it.
Is that the vow of CDL?
I don't care what it's about. I care women's lib. You know, if it's a good solid poem, I'll publish it, racist or not. You know, I mean, that's censorship.
It's a bold call, Michael.
Won't publish it because it's racist. I mean, you know, I.
What if
you know,
it? What if it was about trees and rivers?
I believe or not, you know, my beliefs and my thoughts have no business, you know, affecting my thoughts as a poetry editor.
Oh man, I'm gonna get KKK people to send you poetry, man. I want to see this happen.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would be
if it's a good solid poem, I'll publish it. Please don't hold me to that.
Well, so I would. I mean, what are the reasons for not doing it? I mean, you know,
I mean,
I don't know if anybody wants to jump in that, but why would you, like, why would you not? Like, I wouldn't, because I kind of feel like, you know what, I don't want to perpetuate things that, you know, disgust me. That's my own view.
Like the message.
Yeah, well,
I wouldn't like the message. That's what I would do.
Yeah, I don't care either way. If it's a good, solid poem, believe me, there's poems I'm going to accept that are just, you know, don't move me either way, but it's a good goddamn poem, I'll publish it. I don't care. You know, racist, non-racist, sexist, non-sexist, I don't care. You know,
I grew up in the South.
That's what it's all about. No
life.
Censorship. Yeah. No censorship.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to the first couple issues, that's for sure.
Well, I think what Mike's saying is that, like, on principle, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, but on principle, if it's a good poem, but it just happens to be racist, that's, you know, I mean,
I probably wouldn't.
I'll be honest, I probably wouldn't, but. You know,
I can't, on principle alone, go against that. I can't go against that philosophy. But at the same time, you open yourself up to a backlash that you have no right to protection from, too. So that's something you got to keep in mind before you do stuff like that.
I will pose this in several pieces I have seen. There have been pro-woman pieces. That's sexist. If it's advocating men or woman, it's sexist.
Right. Well, that's sort of in the eye of the beholder. And, you know, just so you know, we have a minute,
beholder,
and then we're then we're in then we're in archive.
Nice. Nice.
You're all for rights, except if it's you know, woman's rights. It's not rights. I know. You're discretionary. And which is why nobody listens to this blog radio show.
No, the difference is that I, you know, just like you say, you wouldn't, you know, you don't care a whole lot for things about, like, trees and rivers, I think it said. You know, it's just I happen to not like poems that are racist. So it isn't, but I wouldn't tell other people that they should or shouldn't do that. You know, I think the difference is that I wouldn't impose that on anybody else.
But poems that are about ass-fucking Big Brother are good, though.
Sex poems, which is why nobody listens to this show, because it is definitely hypocritical.
Well, have you? I don't know. There were a lot of people listening last week, and they sure posted about it.
Nobody's there.
Ignore it.
I think there's more people out there listening than you think there are. If it's sex related, if it's sex related, no matter what it is. I don't care. I don't like riding ponies. I don't. And it says that in my submissions. But if they send a riding poem and it was really fucking great, out of this world, I would probably, publish it if it was good. It's a matter of standing on its own.
Right. Well, just because I don't like censorship doesn't mean that it's a free-for-all either. I'm not saying that just because I think censorship is a bad idea that means that I have some obligation to, anything goes, that I have to accept it on the grounds that I don't like censorship. I don't think it works that way. I mean, there are things that we just simply like or don't like, and it's not, when I say censorship, I think I'm referring more to me telling you what you should accept as citizens. I don't have the right to do that, and, I think that's the difference. If I pay for my server and I pay for my paper, then I can put whatever I want on it, and I can reject whatever I don't like. If I don't like people
Absolutely.
That write about clowns,
Absolutely.
then I kind of look at it like I don't have to put anything about clowns, and I feel the same way about racism. If
Absolutely.
I don't like it, I don't like it, and I don't care.
I'm not trying to attack you, but my only thing was you're talking about censorship, anti-censorship. If somebody writes a racist poem and it's good, well, if you don't publish it, that's censorship. We all censor what we don't like, was my point. I hate racism. I hate sexism. I hate these things. But if it's a good poem...
Can you give us an example? Can you give us an example of a good racist poem?
Well, I won't call anyone out, but, I've received some interesting poems.
Good poems?
I guess people know not to send me racist poems.
It happens. But I don't have to defend any position here. I don't have to defend it. My point was, if you're rejecting a poem based on racism, that's technically censorship. That was my only point.
So you've received racist submissions.
You're saying hypothetically that you believe that's censorship on principle.
Censorship. I know it's censorship. It's not belief. It is knowing it's censorship. If you reject a poem because somebody's black, that's censorship.
I think it's only censorship if you actively try to prevent them from publishing somewhere else. The fact
right.
of the matter
I
is
think
there's
you,
always
like
there's
if
always
you have
a form
a law,
where they can. Yeah,
right.
if you actively
so
suppress it,
so
I mean by that rationale. Editors shouldn't be called editors. Editors should be called censors. That means censorship happens in every single publication that appears on racks across the world. If that's true, if you buy that premise, then I'm down with it.
Right. I think when I talk about censorship, it generally is the suppression of free speech for a person. The person could submit it somewhere else, and we're not saying that they don't have the right to be heard is the difference.
Wow.
Well, there's
All right.
All right.
Wow. My point is...
I don't think you know your point, dude.
I mean, it's okay. I mean, people can, you can put, like you said, we were just saying that, you can put whatever you want out there. And nobody's
exactly.
really against that. It's just like, I don't have to have it. I don't have to have it in my backyard.
My point was, by rejecting a poem because it's racist, by rejecting a poem because it's sexist, that is a form of censorship.
Or is it just being judgmental?
Because you're doing it because if the poem's good and it's sexist, it doesn't matter. If it's a good poem and you reject it, because it's sexist, I feel that censorship.
It's tough to say what's sexist also. I mean, there are people who think anything having to do with women is sexist.
I
mean,
because it's something else, that's technically censorship. And no matter how you guys want to spin it,
this really is just a matter of opinion. I mean,
if you reject something because of its connotations, that's technically censorship.
I think it's how you define censorship, if I prevent it from being published.
Even if I go out of my way to keep it from appearing anywhere, that's censorship.
Censorship is when you're trying to dictate to a culture or a society.
If I tell you you do not have the right to publish this, that is censorship.
Oh my god.
If I read a poem that's sexist, there's a 99% chance that I'm not going to think it's well written, and that's the truth.
No, that's about. I'll give Michael the 1%. I'll give Michael the 1%. There's still a judgment call in there.
My point is, if I reject it because it's sexist, that's censorship.
But you're not saying that that sexist poems shouldn't be allowed in society. And the difference is that, there are groups of people who want it eradicated from all publications, who want all books like that banned, who want you to be unable to access it.
I'm not saying you guys are. All I'm saying, my point was, if I reject something based on its viewpoints, that's censorship. That was my only point. I wasn't saying you guys would reject something because it's sexist or because it's racist my point was just if you.
I think we just have a disagreement on the definition.
Right. I mean, I think that's very different than the government passing a law saying no one is allowed to write sexist poems. No one is allowed to use the F word. No one is allowed to, I think that's the difference. It's sort of like I have the right to be a racist and you have the right to reject me. I mean, I have my rights and you have yours, and I get where you're coming from. But I think that a lot of times when we talk about censorship socially, we're talking about the government or different controls on the population.
I don't shoot for the big kahuna. I don't immediately jump at the government. I try to look at the small groups that censor and go from there.
I'm talking about the government.
Fuck them, So I look at these small groups, these little church groups, these little, small press groups they try to censor. That's where I look at it.
But what they're trying to do is get – what I'm saying is that they're talking about things that affect every editor, not just you or me or one publication. They want to do things that are widespread. And, that's the issue is when somebody says nobody can publish a particular thing because we feel that it's bad or it's morally bad. No one is allowed to look at the human breast on the internet, something like that. Everybody has the right to publish what they want to publish. I don't think any of us would say that right should be taken away from you or from any of us. I think it's a good thing that we have.
I understand 100% what you're saying, and I hope, what I was getting at wasn't, trying to be controversial. My point was just that, like I said, if you don't publish something because of this or because of that, that is technically censorship, and that was the only point I was trying to make. So,
And that's fine, but I don't think that you should tell every other, you should have the ability to control what every other editor decides to do. You know, is the difference is, you know,
well,
my problem is when we start telling one another what they can do, you know.
I absolutely agree. Yeah.
I would never
tell anyone else what to publish. I get slammed all the fucking time for my submission guidelines, you know. So I would never try to.
Isn't that how this whole subject came up in the first place, was the controversy over your submission guidelines?
It just sort of
got me kind of thinking of, you know, about what, you know, and some of the history behind censorship, and a lot of people don't realize that these groups are out there, and they do want to ban books from your library, and they do want to, you know, take away your right to see things on the internet, and they want to limit you, and they do want to be able to tell editors of different publications what they can and they can't do, and they do want to take your submission guidelines and say, well, we don't care. We're going to tell you what's decent and what you can publish. And that's, I think, a dangerous environment. I don't think there's any, you know, any doubt that that's a terrible thing for, you know, just the literary community in general, you know.
Sure. And they're not going to be obvious about it. They're going to start small. They're going to start small and small steps to try to regulate,
you know,
control,
look at all the while saying,
you know, that they're trying to
look at what happened with music. Look at what happened, you know, back with Tipper Gore and these, you know, this idea that, well, what we should do is we should take music and control it, because God forbid our children go into the record store and buy a CD that's got curses on it, you know. That's, you know, you can see, you know, people supposedly have these good intentions, you know, protecting people, but, you know, that's getting the music industry to change the way they do things because of pressure from this group, you know, and, you know, that's the kind of thing, you know, that I think is, like I said, a slippery slope. I mean, then you find yourself saying, you know, well, let's eradicate every CD that's got, you know, something, you know, sexist on it, you know, and I'm not saying that we should. I'm just saying that, you know, there should really be freedom everywhere as much as possible, so... You know, that's sort of where I'm at.
I don't care if it's a racist poem, sexist poem. I'll publish it if it's a good poem. I don't censor shit. So, you know, Michelle's probably cringing right now and wants to stab.
No, I mean, I don't want to speak for Michelle, but I think Michelle's probably saying, you know
what?
No,
Michelle's an anarchist,
you know,
man.
She's not afraid to bring in
voices that she disagrees with. It's good. This is the kind of thing we're supposed to be doing.
Right. I mean, that's the whole point of why we decided to do some of these shows, is really to have these kinds of arguments and see where people are at and see what people feel about it. I mean, that's really the purpose.
I've done a few things. Michelle has gone, what the fuck? So, you know, I'm known for this, and I've probably stroked some people the wrong way, and, you know, I'm proud.
Well, I think we all have. And some of us have all done it this week alone.
I mean, people can send their hate mail to my email. I'll laugh and...
Michelle's sort of like the mom in this situation with her kids running amok sometimes. I mean, I think we've all made her eyebrows go up a few times lately, but you know, she takes it in stride.
Really, I don't know a lot about her. I just know I've tried my best to piss her off, and I never have been able to. No matter what I do, she stays cool, so... You know, I like Michelle.
Yeah,
she's
all right. Yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, I hope you guys don't mind if we kind of wrap it up. I mean, I don't want to, you know, I feel like, you know, it's 12:15 on the East Coast, and, you know, I think that we can, what I wanted to do next week, though, just real fast, is next week sort of talk about this issue, but in a different way, the fear of putting things that are candid or things that are you know, when you speak your mind and you express yourself and you find yourself being called into the boss's office because they've Googled it and they've seen it, or, you know, you have that experience where your neighbors judge you because of things that they've seen. I mean, the internet definitely has made it possible to find out what your neighbors are up to online. And so I sort of thought that would be, you know, something to get into. What happens when, you know, fiction and your creative work sort of cross that boundary into your actual real world life, and what happens? You know, there are people that get fired for some of the stuff they write. I mean, you know, Paul can think of a lot of people, I'm sure too, that he knows.
Yes.
That have lost jobs, that have been passed
yep.
over because they've said, hey, look, you know, we've seen some of what you've done on the internet and we're not happy about it, you know?
Yep.
And I think that happens a lot. So, you know, that's sort of what I was hoping to get into a little bit, you know, the next time we do it, which is, I think, next Friday.
I probably won't call in next week. I didn't even want to call in this week, but you called
right,
me
no.
out.
Well, we appreciate everybody that calls, and, you know,
thank
I feel
you,
bad if people don't, you know, when it's a free-for-all, we sort of all, you know, I feel bad if anybody wanted to get some more points in, you know, and didn't get to, but I guess we will wrap it up.
Whenever I call in, I hurt my cause. All right, I make myself look worse than I am, so I normally don't call in.
That means you're doing your job, son.
No, I think, you know, you made, and you know what, I think to a certain extent you're right about what you're saying, but I think that the definition of censorship is the issue, you know, where I think that that's sort of where we're arguing a little bit, you know. As far as what we're talking about, because, you know, I think you do have the right to publish what you want, and I want a world where that right is protected and where you will always have the ability to put whatever you want on your website. And my concern is that there are people out there that would like to stop you from being able to do that, and those are the people that I'm worried about, you know.
I don't care if it's racist, sexist, whatever, you know, if it's a good poem, I'll publish it, but...
Right,
no.
But there are people out there that would like to stop you from doing that, that would like to say, you know what, you at your publication cannot do this, and you cannot put this out there because we don't like it, and we think it's indecent, and we think that it hurts our kids, and, you know, that's the concern that, you know, I think we start getting into with censorship is just, you know that there are other people that would like to take that right to decide away from you. So, and I think we all pretty much kind of agree that that's a bad thing. So, but I think it's sort of a good place to end it. What do you think, Paul? We
sounds good?
Good
to me.
All right. But no, thank you,
Michael.
Thank you,
everyone
Mike.
Who called in.
Hey,
yeah,
hey,
thanks, you guys.
You guys were great.
We're all good. You know, it's just discussion. You know, that's all.
Let's all go drink beer now. Let's all go drink beer. I think we should.
To me.
Right. Well, good night and thank you.
Good night.
All right, you guys have a good night.
Good night.